I think we ought to move now to the second talk of the afternoon. So we'll be given by Dr. Klimenko from the University of Surrey. So Dr. Klimenko is from the Department of Chemical and Engineering and has worked on the transmission of COVID in indoor environments. So he's going to talk to us about hard surfaces and SARS-CoV-2. So Dr. Klimenko.
Thank you very much, Fan. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you see my slides?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Thank you very much for the introduction. It's an honor to talk at this meeting, and my talk will be partly about my work in subgroup 4 of Task 7 of RAMP, and also about the continuation of the work that we started as part of RAMP that we are still continuing in our department. Well, we have limited resources, so the amount of work that we're doing is maybe not significant, but there are some interesting insights that we are getting, and it would be very interesting to discuss them with you. We've been looking at SARS-CoV-2 and hard surfaces and all the related aspects of it. What we are interested in is the fomite transmission pathway, which is represented here in this nice diagram from Nanjiang's paper from about 3 years ago. So this diagram represents all the known or hypothesized transmission pathways, and the fomite pathway is here in the middle. And it involves the transfer of viral particles from an infected individual onto fomite surfaces. And this can happen by either the deposition of the virus from contaminated hands of an infected individual, or by the deposition of large or small droplets onto their surfaces. And the viral particles can be picked up by a susceptible individual and then finally deposited onto their own mucous membranes by essentially self-inoculation. It's a well-known pathway. There's been a lot of talk about it, but there has been a lot of skepticism about the importance of this transmission pathway in the literature, and there are a couple of papers here and opinions about the importance of this transmission pathway, and many authors are very skeptical about its importance, even questioning why are we still cleaning surfaces and sanitizing our hands so often and so forth. What I want to mention is that there is no and very little direct evidence of fomite transmission, and also no evidence to the contrary. So it's very difficult to provide any evidence because it's difficult to conduct experiments that would either prove or disprove the importance of this pathway. So we've been kind of trying to look at the different aspects involved in this pathway to collect as much information, and hopefully with more data and more experimental measurements, we will be able to have a better picture of this. So there is certainly environmental contamination in terms of SARS-CoV-2 being present on surfaces in different environments. In particular, here are the data from two different measurements, sets of measurements conducted in hospital settings. So those are the environments where SARS-CoV-2 is certainly present. And it has been detected on a number of surfaces, from floors to private objects to common objects handled by multiple people. As you can see, the number of positive samples collected it can be significantly high, so up to about 20% of samples collected from particular types of surfaces. And from this data, it's clear that it's the shared surfaces, common surfaces, that primarily become contaminated. And that is a concern because that virus can end up on the mucous membranes of a susceptible individual and may cause an infection. an important aspect in this pathway is human behavior. So in particular, how we touch our mucous membranes with our hands. And there are a number of studies, I'm just showing a couple here, giving an idea about the frequencies with which we touch our mucous membranes, so our mouth, nose, and eyes. And those frequencies are substantial. So there is a bit of a discrepancy between these two measurements, the sets of data, but you can tell that the frequencies here, for example, on the right-hand side, the total number of times an individual touches their mucous membranes can be of the order of 50 times per hour, which is substantial. And given that we touch multiple other objects in between, it's not unlikely that we would transfer something from the surfaces to our mucous membranes, as it happens with other viruses and other pathogens. So in order to pick up a viable virus, it has to be viable when we pick it up from the surface. And there are different aspects affecting the survival of SARS-CoV-2. So these are primarily the type of surface. So smooth surfaces are better for the survival of the virus as opposed to porous surfaces. The temperature also strongly affects the survivability of the virus. So the lower the temperature, the longer it can survive. The humidity also has a substantial effect. So the stability increases with increasing humidity. And also the pH and other factors such as sunlight and method of contamination can be important. It's well known that coronavirus can survive for extended periods of time on different surfaces. It has been shown in more than one study, but this is a very well known one by Van Dormalen et al. And here we can see that the virus can survive for hours or even multiple days on different surfaces. In particular, in air, the survival is, or time is, or half-life is on the order of 1 or 2 hours. And on some surfaces, it can survive for much, much longer. So it's not unlikely that during that time, some of this virus can be picked up and transferred to mucous membranes. There's a model about the inactivation of the virus that fitted a lot of data collected under different conditions and on different surfaces, which is essentially an Arrhenius type model published by Yap et al. Last year. And it fits the data very well, showing that how the temperature affects the survival times on the different surfaces. Despite the fact that SARS-CoV-2 can survive on surfaces quite well, it can be inactivated quite easily using different alcohols and formaldehyde, can also be physically removed using, for example, a soapy solution. So this kind of corroborates some of the advice about hand washing, in particular with alcohol-based hand sanitizers, and also washing hands with soapy water. So this is something that we are all advised to do, and this seems to work. So based on what we learned essentially from our work on in subgroup 4, we started building our own model to try and quantify the effects of fomite transmission onto the overall risk of infection by SARS-CoV-2. And what we had to do, of course, we had to incorporate all the transmission pathways into the model in order to compare the efficiency of this transmission pathway versus the other transmission pathways. In our model, we make the following assumptions. So We consider all three transmission pathways. So close contact, which is large droplets, aerosol, and fomite transmission pathways. We also take into account different human behavior in terms of the amount of time they spend in an enclosed setting, how much time they spend in close proximity to each other and also to different objects in the setting. We take into account the transfer efficiencies from and to, for example, the fingertips, depending on the surface type. We also incorporate different rates of decay on different surfaces and in the air. And to quantify the risk, we also have the dose response parameter in the model. Now, I will not mention the dose response parameter when I talk about the results, because there is still a lot of uncertainty about that. So the primary goal of this model is to quantify viral loads, which is the primary quantity of interest, which can then be converted into risk based on a value of the dose response parameter. But using a particular dose response parameter might actually skew the results and give either an overly pessimistic or an overly optimistic view of the risk. So the viral loads are the primary quantity that we're interested here. And also with this model, we can consider different mitigation strategies like surface cleaning, hand washing, ventilation, and so on. So it's quite flexible in this respect that we can modulate the different rates involved in the transmission and consider the effect of those. So in terms of the results, I wanted to show just a very quick case study that we've been considering recently. And it involves an office. And just to simplify things, we assume that there are just two individuals in this office, with a susceptible individual who works in this office for 8 hours. So we're considering essentially one working day. And this individual can have either a face-to-face meeting with another individual, or can work alongside this other individual. And the assumption is that the second individual is infected and they spend just 4 hours in this setting alongside the first susceptible individual. We also have some fomite surfaces. So the individuals can be sitting, when they're having a meeting, they can sit at the same table or desk, face each other, for example. And in another scenario, we can have those individuals working alongside each other, so they're working at separate desks. In the case of a meeting, they can handle a document, which is something that they both handle, both pass to each other. And we can consider what happens when we disinfect surfaces, because we're primarily looking at the the efficiency of the fomite transmission pathway. And we can look at the viral loads and see what happens in this case. So this is kind of a graphical representation of the scenarios that we're looking at. So in the first case, the two individuals are sitting at the same table facing each other. And throughout the 4 hour period that they spend in the setting together, 90% of the time they spend in close contact. So they're working with this document, and they don't leave this table for this desk for very long. They're working with it, so they touch it multiple times per hour. After 4 hours, the infected individual leaves and the susceptible individual remains in the setting. In scenario number two, the two individuals are working alongside each other, so they're not in close contact. So the emission of any large droplets does not really affect either the susceptible individual or their private surfaces. So for example, their desk or something that is on their desk. So the setting here is relatively small. It's like a standard office, more or less standard office, like 40 cubic meters in volume. We assume a ventilation rate of one air change per hour. And to be consistent with published data, we take surface touch data and respiratory shedding data from the literature. So we essentially take the shedding rate that is given, and based on the published distributions of droplet sizes, we then apportion different fractions to large and small droplets that are responsible for the close contact and aerosol pathways, respectively. So when we simulate these scenarios, this is what we can see. So when there are no mitigation strategies involved, we could see in scenario one, for example, this is the top row of plots. Apologize for there are too many curves, but hopefully they will make sense. So the, in the first row of plots, we could see the first scenario where the two individuals are in close contact for the first 4 hours. And during this time, the viral load on all the surfaces is building up. So we have the document here in blue, we have the desk in sort of orange, and the door handle, which they don't touch much, is in yellow. The viral load in the air in the second plot increases gradually until it reaches a steady state after about a couple of hours. And then after this, after the infected individual leaves the setting, it starts to drop, both due to ventilation and also due to the inactivation of the virus, natural inactivation of the virus. The third plot shows the viral exposure. So this is the quantity of the virus accumulated on the mucous membranes of the susceptible individual through the three transmission pathways. And here we could see that the fomite pathway in blue is the most significant pathway, followed by close contact, and then followed by the aerosol pathway. And the dashed line here shows the total viral load accumulated on the mucous membranes. If we look at a slightly different representation of the same, in the last plot, we see the relative viral exposure. So it shows the contribution of the different pathways into the total viral load accumulated by this susceptible individual. So we could see that actually the contribution of the aerosol first increases, but then it gradually decreases because there's so much virus deposited onto the objects that are handled and touched by the susceptible individual. In scenario number two, the situation is slightly different. So here the individuals are not facing each other. So the close contact pathway is diminished. So they're only in close contact for about 5% of the time, or about 12 minutes out of those 4 hours. Now, here what we could see is that the second desk, which is used by the infected individual, is now the most contaminated object. Nothing changes in terms of the air contamination, but the viral load accumulated on the mucous membranes of the susceptible individual by the end of the day is significantly lower. It is in fact lower by an order of magnitude than the viral exposure in the first scenario, where the two individuals were in close contact for 4 hours. Now, there is a difference also in terms of the relative viral exposure. And we could see that the aerosol pathway is dominant throughout most of the duration here. And then the fomite pathway overtakes because the viral still persists in the environment. Now, what we can do now, we can consider a mitigation strategy, for example, involving the cleaning of objects that can be cleaned. And those objects are the desks and the door handle. So if we clean those objects at 4 hours after the meeting, what happens is that in both cases, we can effectively eliminate the virus from the hard surfaces. We cannot eliminate it from the document because it's a porous surface and we cannot really clean it. this mitigation strategy does not affect the aerosol pathway. So the viral load in the air remains virtually the same in both cases, as well as in the first case without any mitigation. But in terms of the viral exposure, the situation changes quite significantly. So this surface clean, in the first scenario where the two individuals had been in close contact, reduces the final viral load by about 40% relative to the case without surface cleaning. And this is only cleaning the surface at 4 hours, so after the meeting. So we effectively, what we're doing, we're reducing the amount of the virus in the environment after the meeting, and we eliminate or significantly reduce the rate of contamination from infected, from contaminated surfaces. So infection from contaminated surfaces. This is also reflected here because the inhibition of the fomite pathway is slightly lower in this case. In scenario number two, the difference in the viral exposure is not as drastically reduced. So it's reduced by about 20% compared to the case without any mitigation. And this makes sense because the fomite transmission pathway is minimized in this case because the individuals, first they are not in close contact. So large droplets are not deposited on the surfaces of the susceptible individual. Also, we are decreasing the viral loads anyway on the surface, on the objects that can still be touched by the susceptible individual. So here in the last plot, we see that the aerosol pathway is dominant throughout the duration of this 8-hour working day. So this is just a short case study demonstrating that we assume that the virus picked up by a susceptible individual can actually end up on the mucous membranes and infect the susceptible individual. The risk from this pathway can be substantial under certain circumstances when significant viral loads can be accumulated in the environment. So when individuals are either in close contact or share objects for an extended period of time. So to summarize, while there is no evidence, direct evidence in the literature of this pathway even being something to worry about, it should not be discounted just because we don't have proof yet. Perhaps we will have more evidence in the future. What is important is that the context of interactions is really important here in order to interpret the risks. Of course, if the duration of interactions is very short, the large droplet pathway or the aerosol pathway may be dominant. But under certain circumstances, like in this office scenario, it's quite different. And mitigation strategies like disinfection can be important in these cases. I have not shown any results where there are no large droplets, for example, corresponding to mask wearing, because that would take too long. But that is also an important factor in curbing the efficiency of this fomite transmission pathway. So with this, I would like to acknowledge all the people who have been involved in subgroup 4 of task 7. People in bold here have been involved in the development of the model and producing the results. And I would like to thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Alexei, for your nice talk. We have time for two questions. So, if I may start with one from Pete Knapp regarding cleaning surfaces. Do you know if wet wipes have a positive or negative effect on viral spread on surfaces? I.e., do the wipes spread the virus more than they kill them? Interesting.
Well, alcohol wipes are effective because ethanol is effective at deactivating the virus. But if they're just wet wipes, non-alcoholic wet wipes, then they would probably not do much good.
Right. Another question, the second question from Peter Fleming. Can you clarify if the data presented, I think this must be the Van Dolaren data, is for viable virions or just for viral RNA?
So the data in this study by Van Dormalen, I think, is just RNA.
Is it RNA? Oh, okay.
I think it is just the viral RNA rather than viable virus.
Okay.
But there have been other studies. This is just better known than others. There have been other studies where viable virus was identified.
So that's important because viral RNA doesn't mean necessarily that these are viable.
Indeed, yeah. Okay. But there have been similar studies. Actually, there was one from Australia. I can't remember the surname of the author, but they demonstrated even longer survival times.
Yeah.
And they looked at the viable virus.
Right. Well, there's another question here. If you can give a quick answer to that. It says, CDC estimate 1 in 10,000 cases due to fomite transmission with limited evidence presented. This is from Barry Atkinson. Does this seem plausible to you, that 1 in 10,000 cases due to fomite transmission?
It's very difficult to put a finger on this.
I think that was a general...
Actually, a lot of these papers about fomite transmission are opinion papers.
Right,
which may have something behind them, but it's very difficult to judge.
Well, your case scenario puts down, you know, the possibilities that can exist. So I think that's put that in better context. Well, thanks very much, Oleski, for this very nice presentation. I think it's time to move on. Thanks very much. So.